Wave energy has an important contribution to make to our clean energy mix. Some might argue it can be an important source of baseload power to mitigate the intermittency of other renewable sources. There are many new and not so new technologies that are starting to get the attention of investors and regulators alike. To understand where the sector is in terms of R&D, commercialization, and overall opportunities and challenges in advancing the sector, I am joined by Inna Braverman, co-founder and CEO of EcoWave Power. We talk about EcoWave Power's technology and the hurdles they've had to overcome to get to commercialization. But we also delve into Inna's personal journey from a young, frustrated girl in a small town to one of the movers and shakers in the industry. I'm your host, Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Inna, thank you so much for joining me today. I have been wanting to speak to you for a long time, and because your story is so inspiring. So let's start with your story. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be at this point in your life, and take us back right through to childhood.
So my story with EcoWave Power is quite, I would say, I live in Israel, but I wasn't born here. I was born in Ukraine in 1986. And 2 weeks after I was born, the Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded, which was the largest in history nuclear disaster. And I was actually one of the babies that got hurt from the negative effects of the explosion. So my mother, one day, approached my crib. She looked down at me and she saw I'm pale and blue and not breathing. And she was like, oh my God, the baby is dead. What do I do? She ran to my dad, like panicking. And he said, like, you're a nurse, do something. You know, from the shock, she forgot she's a nurse. And then she remembered she's a nurse. She gave me a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, which actually saved my life. So I don't remember any of that. But, you know, growing up in every family meeting or gathering, everybody would keep, like, reminding the story, saying, like, wow, that's so cool. You got a second chance in life. You should really do something good with it. And I grew up with this feeling of, like, purpose. Like, yeah, wow, I got a second chance in life. It's, like, you know, very unusual. And when I was 4 years old, my family decided to immigrate from the Ukraine to Israel. And we settled in a small town in the north of Israel called Akko. And it's like from one small town to another. Like in Ukraine, it was a small town. In Israel, it was a small town. So like, even though I had this passion and fire to really, like, I don't know, do something to change the world and do something good with my second chance in life, you don't really have the opportunity, you know, in such a small town. So when I grew up, I decided to go study political science, in the hope of, you know, when I finish the university, I will become this great politician that will make peace in the Middle East, or I don't know, whatever aspirational plans I had that didn't happen until today, unfortunately. And when I finished my university, suddenly I found out there's no lineup of politicians that are waiting to hire, you know, a young lady with a major in political science. You know, they didn't hear about my aspiration, I guess. And so I went to work as a Hebrew English translator for a renewable energy company. And there I kind of discovered the whole, like, I would say, wonderful world of renewable energies. I discovered about solar energy, about wind energy. But like solar and wind energy were already fully developed, like technically, and they were already like commercialized. And, you know, all you had to do is like sell, buy, sell. Like there was not too much to innovate. And wave energy, when I heard about it, it really sparked my passion because I saw that on the one hand, according to the World Energy Council, wave energy can produce tremendous amounts. It can produce twice the amount of electricity that the world produces now. On the other hand, no matter which companies, how big they were, how much funding they had, how many like technical expertise they had, no matter which company tried to do wave energy, everybody failed. So that's something that really made me feel like, wow, if I can do wave energy, that's the change I want to do in the world, because like it has such a big potential for positive impact, but nobody can do it. So there I was, like 24 years old, no money, no technical background, no connections. And I decided that I will do, you know, I will create a commercial wave energy power station.
Okay, and I have to stop you there because the way you say that, okay, you've got literally nothing and off you go to start a company. That's not easy. You make it sound quite easy, but it's not. Talk to us. What were some of the challenges you had to overcome?
I think like the first challenge, as I said, like although first what I did when I became passionate about it is I started like looking at online online, libraries, research, data centers, everything that I could find, like why all the companies failed. And I found out that there's like five technical reasons or reasons which prevented all the companies from succeeding. All the time, like each literature that I read was the same five reasons. So I came up with a solution, again, not blueprints and sketches because I'm not an engineer, but like a solution that would solve these five problems. At least, you know, of course, so I thought, because we didn't have the company. I didn't have the company yet to verify. So, but then like, again, the biggest challenge was that I didn't have money, you know, forget about building a power station, but like even registering a patent, like, you know, it's quite cost extensive. I didn't have the money. As I said, I didn't have the contacts. I didn't come from a big town where, you know, you grow up with investors and like the high-tech community around you. I didn't have the technical expertise to actually bring the idea from like an idea to sketches and blueprints and so on. So, which you need to do probably. So there, I think like one, I was very passionate about it, but I would say luck also played some, you know, role into it, because I went to a social event in Israel and there I met the co-founder of EcoWave Power, David Leb. He just sat next to me and said, "What's your passion?" And I said, "Wave energy." And it turned out that it's his passion as well. Like he's not an Israeli. He was researching it in a completely different part of the world. So when both of us kind of found out that we're passionate about wave energy, it was like, you know, a match made in business heaven. And he ended up investing the first $1 million into the company. And that was really the beginning of EcoWave Power. But like, you know, the fact that finding an investor is just kind of the first step to establishing a new business, especially in a very innovative field. Then, you know, I had many challenges of like even being respected as a woman in the energy industry. I was 24. The fact that I was a woman was kind of, and is still kind of a rare occasion in the male dominated energy industry. So there were a lot of, I would say, different kind of elements which were, you know, I think unique to that field and unique to being a female in that field.
But the stars aligned and you overcame these challenges and EcoWave Power was born, which is very exciting. Tell us about the technology. You know, it's quite unique. You know, it would be interesting to understand, while everyone was going offshore, you decided not to. So talk to us about the design and how you came to that.
So as I said, when I was looking at other wave energy companies that failed, unfortunately, I saw that they're kind of in agreement on using like hydraulic principle to convert the wave energy into clean electricity. So that seemed not to be the problem. What they did have as problems was like, as I said, five problems. The first was kind of obvious, you know, they all went into the offshore, and because they went into the offshore, their prices were sky high. You need ships, you need divers, you need underwater mooring, you need cabling. This all cost extremely expensive. A company called Pelamis had to spend something like $150 million in development cost for like a power station that could supply electricity to like 100 households. 100 households will never buy $150 million of electricity, and we should be happy they don't, you know, because all the houses would bankrupt. So the price was high. The reliability was extremely low and the survivability was extremely low, because when you're offshore, you get waves that are like even 20 meters, which is extreme wave height. And unfortunately, no man-made equipment can survive the loads of a 20-meter wave height. So Pelamis, for example, with all the investment and the efforts of the $150 million, broke down after 3 days of operation on the coastline of Portugal, and total loss to the system, because the whole system is in the water. Obviously, nobody in their right mind would go offshore and save it. So it was expensive. It was breaking down. Insurance companies were reluctant to insure offshore wave energy, because who wants to pay premium on $150 million every 3 days? Not exactly a good business case. Environmentalists, which were supposed to be the greatest supporters and proponents of wave energy, were actually objecting it, because it created, the offshore wave energy created a new presence on the ocean floor, which disturbed the marine environment. And it was very hard also to connect it to the grid, because they're that far into the offshore, you need very lengthy and very expensive marine cabling, or like electrical cabling suitable to the marine environment. So then, you know, most of the companies got so preoccupied with lowering the price and just surviving that most of them didn't get the chance to connect to the electrical grid. So there became a big question mark on whether wave energy can even safely connect to the electrical grid. So when I saw these five problems, I said to myself, like, an easy way to eliminate most of them, if not all of them, is just not going to the offshore as a first step for wave energy commercialization. Is connecting the floaters two existent man-made structures. The technology is very simple. The floaters just going up and down with the movements of the waves. They're pushing a hydraulic cylinder, which transmits biodegradable fluid into land-located accumulators. A pressure is being built. The higher the waves, the higher the pressure, which is used to turn the hydro motor, turning a generator, and sending clean electricity into the grid. Now, the power station has a patented storm protection mechanism, so when the waves are too high for the system to handle, the floaters automatically rise above the water level and they stay in the upward position until the storm passes. So if you're looking at this technology, you see it actually solves the five problems. The cost goes down significantly because you're not in the middle of the ocean. You're actually connecting to an existing infrastructure. The reliability becomes higher because you have the patented storm protection mechanism. And because in the nearshore and onshore, you don't actually get 20 meters wave height, which is a big advantage for survivability. From the first power station that we built, we were insured because, you know, breakwaters are already structures that come with insurance for ports. So we just kind of integrate into the breakwater so we could get insurance, which is a big progress. We connected to the grid the first time in Gibraltar. So it was grid connected for 6 years, and now we're connected to the grid also in Israel. It's the first time in the history of Israel that wave energy officially connected to the electrical grid. And we're 100% environmentally friendly since we don't connect to the seabed at all. We only connect to existing man-made structures, which, you know, are not so good to the environment. So we take structures that have to be built to protect coastal populations and ports and turn it into a source of clean electricity.
You mentioned your projects in the port of Jaffa and obviously Gibraltar. You also touched briefly on Portugal, famous for its waves, but like you said, luckily not 20 meter waves. But it would be interesting to know, what are some of the lessons that you've learned from these projects? Because obviously you've been doing this for a while now and you've had great success already. So how are you applying those lessons to future projects? And on that, where are you planning to take your technology? Portugal and the US, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So listen, a new project for us is kind of a new world of discoveries and the kind of confirmation of results. Wave energy is in its initial step of commercialization. And unfortunately, there's not too much competitors in the field that actually do like real condition testing, like testing in the water. Most of the companies are still in kind of, computerized testing or simulation or like testing in a wave pool, which doesn't really produce kind of the real results that we need in order to confirm technologies, in order to further develop technologies and so on. So for us, the first grid connected project that we did was in Gibraltar. So in Gibraltar, we were able to validate some of our forecasts, like, can we really forecast well how energy, wave energy converts into electricity? Like, do we calculate correctly the losses in different parts, like mechanical, hydraulic, electric parts in the system? Can our technology really withstand the stormy conditions that we believe it can withstand? Like, we got to test our storm protection mechanism and improve it for other sites as well. Even can we properly forecast how much energy will a station at a specific site will be able to produce before actually installing the power station, which is key for commercialization of wave energy. Because when you're putting, let's say, a solar panel on your rooftop, you want to know before you're paying money for it, right? How much money will you save from it? How much energy will it produce? And with wave energy, like, you know, it's all very theoretical. So do we know how to forecast? So really, Gibraltar was kind of the first time that we got a chance to see how our forecast and kind of the reality merge. Then we connected to the grid our next project, which is the Jaffa Port project in Israel. We improved a lot of the technical and conversion related ingredients in Jaffa Port based on the experience in Gibraltar. We put already larger floater sizes. We registered new patents of new kind of upgrades in the system so it can start working at lower wave regime. As I said, we improved the storm protection mechanism and so on. So now, together with EDF is our Electricidad Advance, is our partner in the Jaffa Port project, we're starting to verify the results, like seeing, okay, each month, how far away are we from what we forecasted? How much is the CapEx? How much is the OPEX, like the operation cost in comparison to what we forecasted? And each site like this that we get really for us, like, was a significant boost in the technology and significant like additional knowledge boost. And our plans for the future, like you correctly said, is really, right now we're focusing in two markets, in the European market and in the US. We're focused in Europe because Europe is the most advanced in terms of regulation, legislation, grants, and we're started to be focused in the US because we're publicly traded in the US on the NASDAQ. And also the US, according to the Energy Information Administration, has the potential to produce 66% of all the United States energy needs from the power of the waves, which is significant. The project in the US that we're developing is in the port of Los Angeles, which is one of the largest ports in the US. We're doing it in collaboration with Shell. We just signed an agreement with Shell MRE. And we're right now, we submitted all the paperwork. So we're waiting for a last license from the Port of LA and the Army Corps of Engineers. As soon as we get it, we have like 6 months of implementation and we will have our first US project up and running, which is very exciting. And in Portugal, we're also like super, super excited, I would even say, about this project, because it will be the first commercial scale project that EcoWave Power will ever build. And I think that also the first commercial project of wave energy that will be built in the world. And it will be in the city of Porto. We signed a concession agreement with APDL, which is the port authority in Porto. We already received all the licenses in March this year, so 2 months ago, and set an execution bond to show the seriousness in executing the project within a period of 2 years. And what's so exciting in the project, it wouldn't be just to verify formulas or to prove that our storm protection is working or that we build it cost effectively or like prove that here another project that solves the five problems. But it's actually a project that would put wave energy and EcoWave Power at a completely different phase. We will get the chance to prove that wave energy can produce a lot of electricity, because in a small scale, of course, you couldn't prove it. And that's large scale already, larger scale. And that wave energy can become profitable. And that's key, you know, because in the end of the day, everybody wants to do impact investing, but you want to see the profitability of the investment. And I think the Portuguese project is our opportunity to really do that.
Great segue into my next question, because I would like to get an understanding of the wave energy space. I mean, obviously, for EcoWave Power, you've made great progress. This is a big project in Portugal, commercialization of the technology. Is wave energy a competitive space, would you say? And where are we in terms of wave energy technology really making an impact on our energy transition?
So in terms of competitors, I would say that unfortunately, and that's a rare thing from a CEO of a public company to say, unfortunately, there's not enough competition. Competition in wave energy sector, like real competition, people that go and put power stations for profit in different ports or in offshore or wherever they want to put it, would be actually good. Because in order for a field, especially an innovative field, to develop, you need to have many participants. Many participants enables larger supply chain, cheaper supply chain, right? More subcontractors that are working with more companies, more experience gained faster. It enables regulations to develop faster, because one of the kind of showstoppers for the first commercialization of wave energy is lack of regulations. So when I came to Israel and said, listen, I'm Israeli, you know, so it should be easiest for me. And I came to the like Israeli electric authority and I said, like, you know, let's connect my wave energy power station to the grid. They didn't know what I'm talking about. Like, there's no regulations, there's no licensing pathway, there's no feed-in tariffs. So sometimes it can take as little as 6 months to build a power station and as long as 2 or 3 years to get the regulation in place. The situation would be different if more competitors would come, because one would knock on the US door, one would knock on the Spanish door, one would knock on the Portuguese door, and then you would get regulation sparks in different places and it would be very fast. But unfortunately, we don't have it. As I said, most of the companies are still in very early computerized simulation or like wave pool testing. They're not like there to actually deploy in the water like EcoWave Power has been doing. So I would like to see it changing. I would even go farther and share with you that some wave energy companies that are in premature phases or like in earlier phases than EcoWave Power have contacted us and requested us to help them with like some design elements, like they weren't sure how to connect something to something, or like asked us for different like technological advice, and we gave them free of charge. Like, we openly shared and transparently shared the information in order to try to create more success and more competition, which is again rare but good for the world. Because we all want the same thing, to get like a 100% environmentally friendly world. In terms of where wave energy is right now and how far it is from commercialization, being a technology developer that really kind of with very little support, and I mean like financial support from the outside, technical support, because there's not a large industry, the fact that we were able to build a project in Gibraltar and connect it to the grid when we were a super small company, we were a team of like 4 or 5 people when we did that. And the fact that we just connected our second grid connected project in Israel, we're like about 12 people now in the team, still not like a crazy big amount of people. Relatively small. Get the project in LA, get the licenses and the project order in Portugal and in other locations that are interested. Look, for a small team with not very large resources, like we're not a huge energy company, to be able to execute a project after a project after a project, proving that nothing breaks down and here it works and the grid survives, like every concern is kind of settled, shows me that wave energy can actually commercialize quite fast with the right assistance. So like, imagine that I didn't have 12 people and like out of the 12 people, 6 engineers, right? Imagine that I would have 60 engineers. Like, imagine how much more I could do, how much more EcoWave Power could do, how much more we could achieve. So the solution for wave energy commercializing in the near future, I don't think lies at this point in crazy technological development. I think it lies mostly on creating regulatory framework suitable for wave energy implementation around the world. I think it lies in like providing more funding for wave energy, because wave energy is not even close in terms of funding. I wouldn't say that solar and wind are getting, I would say that oil and coal are getting. Oil and coal, which are polluting, are the most subsidized sources in the world, more than any renewable energy project. So more funding, more regulations, and really more big companies joining the effort, like Shell joined the Port of LA, EDF joined the Jaffa Port project, that really makes a change because they have more resources.
Inna, do you think, you've touched obviously on the importance of collaboration. Do you think we should get the solar people to talk to the wind people, to talk to the wave energy people, and maybe rather than operating in these silos, if everybody starts getting together and talking and having these discussions, we can start learning from each other? Because it would be great if you don't have to go through the decades of development that solar went through, that you can maybe leapfrog learning from those experiences and start to really make an impact.
You're 100% right, because like each new renewable energy source that develops, if it's wind after solar and tidal and wave and algae, and like there's so many like different, you know, renewable energy ideas and sources, like solar really went through, like you said, a decade of struggle to get regulations in place, to get the prices down, to get like, you know, to solve a lot of problems that every new technology has, technical problems and so on. And yes, it would be great to kind of piggyback on the experience of other renewable energy sources that are more commercialized in order to shorten these timelines. I think also that governments can learn from previous regulations that they've made for other renewable energy sources and, you know, drive the regulation for new and innovative renewable energy sources from that. Not only that, I would say that I think solar and wind are very much complementary, and so is wave to all these sources, because each source is stronger in a certain country or in a certain time of day or during a certain season. So basically, like wave, for example, is the least intermittent source of renewable energy. It's the most stable out of them all, because the density of the water is greater than the density of air, and because like usually you have some movements at the sea that enables energy generation. According to all the studies, if you use wave power as base load for solar and for wind, you will get a much more stable supply and you will save all the bad loads that happen to grids due to, you know, the shutting off of solar. Like, because in the morning, solar can produce 100 megawatts at a certain site, and here comes the night and it's zero. So that's not healthy for the grid to go down in a second from 100 megawatt to zero. So think that you have wave energy in between to come and compensate, and you don't have to shut off. You're just continuing to produce. So I think it's key for all renewable energy really to collaborate and create kind of renewable energy islands or microgrids. And then really the world can move from this, I would call it unmovable number right now, because for many, many years already, the world only produces 20% from renewable energy and 80% from polluting sources. So if we want to move the 80-20, which I'm hearing this 80-20 since I established EcoWave Power, so like it didn't move too much to the right direction, although we see a lot of opening of new projects, like in order to move, I really think that all renewable energy sources have to collaborate.
So while you're talking to me, obviously our listeners can't see this, but just to paint a picture, You have such a bright disposition and you're so cheerful and energetic, and I can really feel your passion across the airwaves. So clearly you haven't lost any steam since beginning your company, and it seems as if you've gained steam, gained momentum and gained drive to keep pushing forward. Am I correct?
So of course, with every step that you take in the right direction, I think you gain, like you said, you gain more steam, you gain more confidence, you gain more appreciation, and you gain more opportunities. As I said, in the beginning, when I started Eco with Power, I was 24 and almost nobody wanted to even talk to me because she just opened a company. She has nothing. Like, what do we have to talk to her? And when I'm saying nobody, I'm not talking investors or kind of the obvious wants and needs, but even universities didn't really look at us or were eager to collaborate with us on these new ideas. They said, what does she know that nobody else knows? 99% of the competition went to the offshore. So what is she talking about? And, as time passed by, I can even send you a number of new studies by leading universities saying the way to commercialize wave energy is onshore, is integrated into existing infrastructures such as breakwaters, piers, oil drilling platforms, and many other structures that are out there. It's easier, it's cheaper. Suddenly kind of you're seeing how your drive, your passion, your steam is really changing the academic world. Professors are contacting us to include eco-wave power technologies in textbooks. Actually, books that are being taught in engineering faculties in leading universities include eco-wave power. That's a big, big step forward from being the girl that nobody wanted to hear from. So even the fact that we were able to implement, I'll tell you a personal story. I got funding for the first Israeli project that we built from the Israeli Energy Ministry and from the chief scientist. And it was a very nice lady. Her name is Dr. Bracha Khalaf. I still remember. And, in order to get the funding, you have to submit kind of a grant submission. And then they invite you to a face-to-face meeting with all the scientists in the room. And I came and I said, I really want to do my wave energy project. Support me. And they said, no, we don't want to. And then I submitted the second time. And they said again, no, we don't want to. And they said, and they even said, why do you need wave energy? We have solar, we need wind. Why do we need also wave? We don't want. I came a third time and they said, take the money and just leave us alone. But promise us that you will actually build it. Even make it turn on a small lamp, just build something. They were so they were in this belief that these huge companies invested hundreds of millions of dollars in wave energy and didn't end up building anything. They got stuck in R&D and that I will actually build. So not only I built, I also connected to the grid and I became the first PPA, power purchase agreement in the history of Israel, that signed between the wave energy developers to the electric utility of Israel. And I became the first grid connected wave energy that was ever delivered to the Israeli national grid. So that makes you proud. That makes you you feel that you're making a change. What I wanted to do as a child and I couldn't because I was from this small town. So I'm actually feeling that I'm doing it. I would add that as an entrepreneur, I'm also a bit frustrated that it's not happening fast enough because I can control how fast I develop certain elements of my technology. I can maybe control, I can control my employees. I can control different items that are, under my kind of supervision or leadership, but I can't control how fast regulation is being made. I can't control if renewable energy is trending or not, because sometimes it's not trending, so then less funding is going to it, then it's not that good. And I know the technology is good, I know the technology is there, and I know that with very minimal, comparatively minimal resources, I got to where I got. I want to do the expansion part of my kind of entrepreneurial journey of eco-wave power, I would say even. I want to see it happening faster because we have a lot of ports and coastal cities and governments which are contacting us eager to get wave energy in their country. And then either we don't have enough employees to build in parallel in many places or it takes too long to do regulation. There are these showstoppers which are external, which are not related directly to the technology. And that kind of frustrates you that you can't move fast enough. That's something that I would like to see changing.
Well, considering the amount of energy and passion you do have and the fact that you've got this never say die attitude, perhaps we will still see a great deal of change and you personally might bring about a great deal of change to come. So that's very exciting. In a final question, what is next for EcoWave Power? You mentioned there's a team of 12. you're doing big things, but you're going to keep building. You obviously have the projects lined up. So talk to us about what's next.
So I think really what's next is bringing wave energy into commercialization, which is kind of the thing that everybody wants to see, to bring wave energy to the next level and show that we're in the same league and maybe sometimes even better than other renewable energy sources. Because as I said, wave energy is the least intermittent source of electricity. So in many sites around the world, we can produce more electricity than wind and solar. And I think what's really important for EcoWave Power is to perfectly, you know, never an execution of anything is never perfect, but as close as perfect as possible, I would say, executing the Portuguese project and really showing to the world, that's it. We're towards the end of our R&D. We reached commercial phase. We're producing large amount of electricity. We're becoming profitable. Like, take us seriously. You know, when you're ordering wind and solar, definitely consider wave as well, because they're not competing. As I said, I see them as complementary. And what I would like to see in the near future, and I'm working towards it, is really, you know, that every year more and more breakwaters are being built because of climate change, because of the rise of the water level. A lot of areas become more dangerous, and like a lot of these structures are being built. I would like to see a legislation that if you're planning to build a structure of this sort, which is protecting the coastal population, but is really damaging to the ecological balance and to the natural environment, you have to integrate wave energy into it. So if you're like kind of ruining the environment, like make sure that you fix it in the same time. That's something that would really promote the commercialization of wave energy, because think how many structures, instead of trying to fit it like a puzzle or like a Lego, trying to fit wave energy that wasn't even built for, you know, originally, like the breakwater wasn't built for wave energy, so you have to make it compatible. You're already getting a new structure with all the connections inside it to deploy wave energy into it. It would make it faster, it would make it cheaper, it would make it more cost efficient. It would really make a change. And we really started driving like different legislation. Like, for example, we just helped EcoWave Power just helped draft a law SB605. That passed into law by Governor Newsom in California for the promotion of wave energy. Like, who believed that a small company from Israel would be doing legislation in the Senate in the United States? Like, that's huge. So I do believe that I have the fire and I have the ability and passion to make a change. And I really hope that everybody would join me, or everybody that's needed would join me in order to make it happen faster.
Inna, if there is a young girl listening to this podcast and she's sitting in a small town feeling inspired and frustrated, what would your message be to her?
I always say that passion is the greatest renewable energy source, even stronger than the power of the waves. So if something is your true passion, it's in your heart, never give up, because no matter how many people tell you no, all you need is one person to tell you yes. And there's billions of people in the world, so you can find that one person.
I love that. I feel very inspired, and I'm sure our listeners do too. Inna, thank you so much. It's been inspiring and such a pleasure.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you very much.
And thank you to our listeners. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Logg, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.